I wasn't thinking about safety or consequences when I pulled out my phone that night. I was on break, eating the last soggy fry from my tray, when the guy stormed in with a hoodie, black gloves, and a duffel bag. Everyone froze. I didn't scream. I didn't hide. I recorded it. Snapchat. I taped it through filters while the guy yelled at the cashier. My fingers shook, but I got the whole thing. Him ripping open the register, the manager with his hands up. The idiot even looked straight at my phone. Cops were on him in 2 days. They played my video on the local news like it was an Oscar winner. Likes, shares, views. People called me brave. I wasn't. The police said thanks. My boss didn't fire me. Customers recognized me for a week or two. Then it faded. Or that's what I thought. 3 weeks later, I was closing up alone. The others left early. Something about a birthday dinner. But I was used to that. It was just me. The hum of the fryers cooling down. The flickering light over the soda machine. And my phone. I reopened the Snapchat story for the 100th time. My face flashed on screen clear as day from the news segment that aired that week. They hadn't blurted. My name was spoken aloud. That was their mistake. I remember laughing a little at how dumb it all was. The video had passed 10,000 views, people still commenting like it was a meme. I heard a noise. Not a bang, not a crash, just something subtle. A shift in the room like someone had dragged a chair an inch across tile. I paused the video. I thought maybe one of the guys had come back. Sometimes they forgot something or dropped by to joke around before leaving. I called out. No answer. I checked my phone. 11:47 p.m. Almost done. I stepped into the hallway that led to the back office, phone light on. And there he was. He was standing in front of the staff lockers, motionless. A hoodie pulled over his head, face completely covered by some kind of ski mask. I stopped walking. My feet locked to the floor for a second, not out of fear, out of confusion. I didn't know this guy, but something about his build, his posture, he looked familiar. He didn't say anything. He didn't move. I whispered a shaky, "Who the hell are you?" He took one step forward, and I backed into the wall. I tried to keep calm, tried to sound firm when I said, "We're closed, man. You need to leave." He took another step, slow and steady. I turned to run. I wasn't making it to the front. That much I knew. My only shot was the side exit through the kitchen. I bolted that way, but someone grabbed me hard around the waist from the shadows by the walk-in freezer. I screamed and kicked, elbowed whatever I could hit. I was yanked back against the wall. Another man now, taller, bulkier, same black hoodie and face covered. He didn't say anything either at first. They just stared at me. I twisted, kicked again, and one of them finally spoke. His voice was rough, angry like he'd been smoking gasoline. "Do you recognize us?" I didn't answer. I couldn't. My heart was hammering so hard, I thought I was going to throw up. The second man leaned closer. "You got our brother locked up. You think that was brave? You think that was funny?" My head spun. I tried to tell them I didn't know who they were, but it was useless. They knew everything. They'd watched the news, saw the video, saw my face. I remembered then. His face. The guy in my video. This was about that. He wasn't just some random thief. He had people. And now they were here. One of them pulled a metal rod from under his coat. Not a crowbar, not a bat, a thick iron pipe. He held it loose at his side, tapping it against the floor. I tried to run again, this time toward the front door, even though I knew it was pointless. The knob didn't turn. Locked. Not just jammed, locked from the outside. I froze. That wasn't protocol. We only locked it after the last person left, and I was the last one. Or so I thought. Someone had locked me in. That meant someone else was part of this. I turned slowly. One of the men stepped forward. He He wasn't stealing. He was providing. He had 3 kids. A mother with cancer. We warned him not to take the job, but he did it for them. You ruined that. You put on a show. Now we're the ones who have to clean it up. They weren't yelling. They weren't ranting. They spoke with this terrifying calm, like it was all decided already. One of them raised the pipe. My legs moved before my brain did, but not fast enough. The pipe slammed into my thigh. I dropped, the pain flooding my entire body. I tried to crawl, dragging myself toward the back again. They didn't stop me, not right away. I reached the back door. I saw the little latch that would lead to the alley, but it didn't move. Jammed or locked too. I couldn't tell. I was on the floor now, gasping, leg burning like it was broken. I turned my body, trying to kick at the door with my good leg, but then I heard something slosh. Gasoline. One of them had a can. The sharp chemical scent filled my nose before I saw the liquid hitting the tiles. He was pouring it in a line from the fryer all the way to where I lay. The other one walked behind me, humming some twisted tune. I heard a lighter flick. The sound alone made me scream. They weren't in a rush. That was the worst part. They moved like they had all night. The one with the can walked up to me, tilted it, and dumped the rest of it right on my back legs. I tried to scream for help, but my throat was raw and the only thing that came out was a broken sob. He crouched beside me. This place burns. You burn. Fair trade. You broadcasted his face. Now we'll burn yours into the floor. I saw the match in his hand. A real match. Wooden. He struck it on the tile and held it up, watching the flame dance. I thought that was it. The flame hovered for a second, then dropped. I shut my eyes. I expected fire, heat, agony. But instead, I felt nothing. I opened my eyes just in time to see the match hit my soaked shirt and go out. No blaze, just a dead stick on top of me. The man stared at it, confused, then angry. Before he could light another, we all heard the pounding. Police. Front door. Someone shouting commands. They must have been close by. One of the attackers panicked. The other cursed and threw the empty gas can. They argued. I could barely hear what they were saying. Something about time, about running. Then one of them pulled another match. He struck it and flung it toward me before running. I watched it fly through the air like a bullet in slow motion. My heart stopped. But just like before, it fizzled out in midair. No fire. No explosion. Just silence. They were gone seconds later. The police burst in through the front after that, finally breaking the glass. They found me half conscious, soaked, beaten, and unable to move. But I was alive. They caught both men within an hour, hiding in a dumpster behind the movie theater 2 blocks away. But they weren't the only ones arrested. Turns out, 2 of my co-workers had taken cash to leave early that night and locked the doors behind them. One of them backed out last minute and tipped off the police. That call is what saved me. I don't work there anymore. I don't film strangers anymore. And I deleted the Snapchat the day I got out of the hospital. I don't care about views. I don't care about being known. What I do care about is how long a match can burn. And how close I came to finding out what happens when it doesn't go out. I moved in a few weeks ago. It's a 1-bedroom apartment, 2nd floor, old building. Nothing fancy. It came semi-furnished, which meant I didn't have to worry about buying a couch, a bed, or even a microwave. Rent was cheap, and the neighborhood was quiet. Maybe too quiet. I live alone. Just me and my cat, Baxter. He's about 6 years old, gray with black stripes, and usually pretty calm. He took the move well, but since day one, he's avoided the living room. More specifically, the couch in the living room. At first, I thought maybe there was a smell or something stuck in the fabric. I checked under the cushions, looked for bugs, spilled food, anything. Found nothing. Still, he wouldn't go near it. He'd walk into the room and freeze if the couch was in his path. Then, he'd circle around it like it was a hole in the ground. One night, I saw him hissing at it from the hallway. No reason, just sitting there, puffed up, growling low. That was the first time I felt uncomfortable in the apartment. But I pushed it down. It was just a cat being weird. That's what I told myself. That weekend, I was messing around with Snapchat filters, just bored, filming Baxter with those dumb puppy ears and face distortion effects. He hated it. Typical. Then I pointed the camera around the room, just looking at how the filters mapped random objects. It was when I panned past the couch that I froze. The face filter locked onto the top right cushion, right where someone's head would be if someone was sitting there. I thought it was a glitch, so I pulled back. The filter disappeared. Moved the phone closer again. Face appeared, smiling, not cartoonish like the rest. It was subtle, human-like, not exaggerated. Eyes locked forward, unmoving. I stood up and moved around the room. Tried the filter from different angles. Same result. Always on the top part of the couch, as if it was mapping to something invisible. I even switched filters. Every single face filter latched onto the same spot. I backed away slowly. The filter stayed fixed. The longer I looked at it, the more I realized the face wasn't just appearing. It was following. I moved right. The face shifted left. I moved left. It tracked me, like it was watching. I dragged the couch away from the wall, gripping the phone with both hands. Moved it slow, backward without taking my eyes off the screen. The face didn't glitch. It didn't vanish. It moved with the couch. No matter where I placed it, the filter kept mapping something on the same headrest cushion. That thing was still there. I tried to rationalize it. Maybe it was the app. Maybe some weird lighting. But deep down, I knew better. I turned the couch around, just in case. That's when the face rotated too, locking onto me, watching me straight on. No reaction, just a presence. My fingers were trembling, but I pushed the couch into the hallway anyway. Its weight scraped the wood and echoed through the apartment. I didn't care about the noise. I wanted it out. I shoved it toward the door, turned it sideways, dragged it down the stairs step by step. The whole time I kept checking the phone. The filter stayed fixed, dead center. I left it on the curb, angled away from the building. Thought that would be enough. Thought I'd done something smart. When I got back upstairs, I locked the door and shut every blind. But the silence didn't feel like safety. I couldn't stop myself. I walked over to the window and peeked out through the side of the curtain. The streetlight buzzed above the couch. I raised my phone, Snapchat still open. The face was there, even from that distance. Still centered on the same spot. Still facing my direction. It hadn't disappeared. It hadn't even shifted. Just waited. That night, I fell asleep without remembering how. One second, I was lying there, scrolling mindlessly. The next, I was frozen. Awake, but not awake. I couldn't move anything. My eyes were open, stuck on the ceiling, breathing shallow. It was like my whole body had disconnected, but not the fear. The fear worked fine. My heart slammed against my chest like it wanted out. Something was wrong. Not vague, not abstract. Something real was in the room. Only my right hand twitched. Barely. My phone was still next to me. My thumb dragged it closer. The screen lit up my face in a faint glow. Snapchat was already open. And the couch. The couch was back, at the foot of the bed. Right in front of me. I tried to rationalize again, but nothing made sense anymore. I had thrown it away. I saw it on the street. I left it there. But now it was here. Same cushion, same burn mark near the armrest, same exact shape. I aimed the phone at it, just to see. Maybe to prove I wasn't losing it. The filter caught something instantly. The face appeared, but it wasn't static this time. It was rising, slowly, like something getting up. First, just the eyes above the cushion, then the mouth, then the rest of the head. It wasn't just standing there. It was reacting. It knew I was watching. And then the filter glitched downward, recentered. Now it was tracking something closer, something on the bed. I didn't want to believe it, but I had no choice. The shape had moved from the couch onto the mattress. The pressure at my feet hit a second later. Not immediate like in a dream. This was slow and cruel. First, just a shift in the blanket, then weight, enough to sink the mattress slightly. I kept the phone aimed at the spot. The filter followed. It mapped the thing crawling toward me, like it was analyzing each movement. It was hunched low, trying to stay out of sight, but the filter picked it up with perfect clarity. A distorted face, teeth clenched, eyes blank. It didn't blink. I wanted to scream, but my throat wouldn't listen. My chest burned like my lungs were locked. The thing crawled with its knees and elbows, dragging itself closer with uneven rhythm. I could feel the shift in pressure each time it moved. The bed creaked softly, but there was no sound beyond that. No breathing, no footsteps. Just slow progress and that growing, suffocating heat that rolled up my legs with every inch. The filter warped again as it approached my waist. Its face moved like it was stretching, like it was trying to tear the digital skin off. My thumb shook violently. The phone was slipping. I couldn't look away. The thing was almost on top of me. Then I felt it. A breath, hot and rancid, directly on my stomach. I was seconds from blacking out, not from fear, but from the sheer pressure building inside my own body. I didn't see Baxter leap, just felt the bed shake. His claws dug into my ribs as he landed on me, hissing, ears pinned back. That snapped something loose in my head. I gasped. The gasp turned into a scream. My limbs jerked free all at once. I shoved myself upright, clawing at the blanket, dragging Baxter with me. He wasn't trying to run. He was trying to protect. The couch was still there at the end of the bed, but the presence, whatever it was, had vanished. I didn't waste time looking for signs. I bolted for the bedroom and nearly tripped over my own feet in the hallway. That's when the heat slapped me against the face for real. Not phantom warmth, but dry, dangerous heat. I turned the corner and saw the kitchen glowing. Orange flickers bouncing off the walls. The stove was on, all four burners. The curtains were already halfway gone, curling into black smoke. Flames climbed the wall like they had a path to follow. I could barely see. I scooped up Baxter with both arms and ran. Didn't even grab my shoes. The hallway was already full of smoke. My eyes burned. I stumbled down the stairs coughing, almost fell twice, and burst out the front door choking. People had gathered on the sidewalk, backing away from the flames. I turned around just once, just to see. The couch wasn't there anymore. Not in the room, not in the fire, not on the curb, just gone. I stayed at a friend's place after that. Didn't talk much. I told her about the fire, not about the filter, not about the couch, not about what crawled up the bed and stared into my ribs. I didn't want to hear myself say it out loud. I've been sleeping with all the lights on, windows shut, phone deleted, not just the app, everything. I use a flip phone now. Baxter hasn't left my side. He sleeps on my chest, alert, watching the room. Sometimes he growls at nothing. But I don't ask why. I don't want to know. A few nights ago, I woke up to that weight again. Lower this time, at my knees. It didn't last long. Just long enough for the mattress to bend under something that wasn't there. I didn't open my eyes. Just kept still, breathing shallow, pretending I wasn't awake. And then I heard it. Plastic crackling, like burning fabric being crushed slowly. Just for a second. When I finally looked, there was nothing. No couch, no face, but the floor still smelled like smoke.
It all started in a normal day. Everything was normal until Dana shoved her phone in my face, grinning like a maniac.
You need to see this.
She opened Snapchat, flipped it to selfie mode, and aimed it at me. A skull popped up over my face. It wasn't cartoony. It had cracks, sharp cheekbones, jaw movement. The eyes glowed faint red. It moved with me, every tiny twitch. Too accurate. She laughed, spun back around with her phone, then pointed it at the kitchen. Nothing. The filter only triggered on faces. She pointed it back to me. Skull again. So she started walking around the house with the filter active. Then she froze, lowered the phone a little, brought it back up, and kept it still. What is it?
Something's here.
I looked over her shoulder in the middle of the living room, right in front of the couch. There it was. The skull. The skull was just a filter, but a filter applied to something else. Something we didn't see, but it was there. The skull was just floating there, not on her, not on me. It was locked in the air, facing the hallway. We tried it again, same thing. She pointed the phone towards the hallway. The skull appeared, standing place like an app was tracking someone that wasn't visible to us. It didn't move at first, just floated, perfectly still. No explanation. We turned on the lights, closed curtains, tried with other phones. It kept showing up. Every time she opened the app and pointed it towards the spot, it would reappear. Same size, same tilt. But after an hour of messing around, we noticed something new. The skull wasn't staying frozen anymore. It would tilt slightly, just enough to notice it wasn't static. Like it was adjusting its posture. Dana was into it. She thought it was exciting. I was trying to figure out if we had some kind of facial recognition bug or a light reflection issue, but nothing made sense. The filter wasn't showing up anywhere else, only in that one spot. That night, we left the phone recording on a tripod and left the room. 10 minutes later, we came back. We reviewed the footage. At exactly the 6-minute mark, the skull turned, like it was looking towards the kitchen, and then it vanished. I wanted to stop right then, but Dana smiled.
It's doing things. This is crazy. We're not done.
That week, we became obsessed. We pointed the phone at every room in the house. The skull started appearing in more places, but never randomly. It always followed a pattern. It would appear in the hallway after showing up in the living room, then the basement door, then back in the hallway, like it was moving, slowly. Dana started talking to it.
If you can hear me, do something. Like, move. Nod. Lift a hand.
A hand?
I don't know. Do something.
It never responded. Not directly. But after we asked it to move, it would sometimes appear in a new spot. Closer. Like it heard us, but didn't want to do exactly what we asked. We recorded it overnight. At 3:17 a.m., the skull flickered onto the screen in the hallway. It rotated towards the door, then disappeared. Nothing after that. But the next morning, we found the basement door wide open. Neither of us had touched it. I wanted to stop. I told Dana it wasn't a game, that we were crossing into something that we didn't understand. But she didn't care. She was caught in it. She thought we were making history. Proof of something beyond. Later that night, we caught something different. While Dana was recording the hallway, the skull appeared again. But this time, it started drifting. It didn't float like before. It moved frame by frame, like something was walking. It turned slowly towards the camera. Then the app crashed. Just cut to black. She wanted to go to the basement. Said if anything else was going to happen, it'd be there. I said no. She called me paranoid, took the phone and walked to the door anyway. I followed, but stayed a few steps back. She aimed the phone into the basement. Darkness, no filter. She stepped closer. Then it happened. The skull suddenly appeared. Not in the basement. In the hallway, facing me. It wasn't floating now. It was the height of a person, facing me directly. The phone started shaking in her hand. I stepped back. And then something grabbed my ankle. It yanked me so hard I hit the floor head first. My teeth cracked. My leg dragged across the hardwood so fast it burnt my skin. I screamed. Dina grabbed my arms, but whatever had me was stronger. She couldn't hold me. I was pulled across the floor and thrown down the basement stairs. My body bounced off step by step like dead weight. Neck, spine, ribs. I hit them all. The darkness swallowed everything as the door slammed shut above me. My face was wet with blood, but I couldn't tell from where. My shoulder was out. I tried to move, but my whole body burned. The phone had landed near me, still working, still showing the skull filter. I aimed it into the dark. Skulls, dozens. They were around me, all staring in my direction. They weren't moving, but they were closer than before. I turned the phone slowly. More skulls, behind me, to my left, above. There were more than I could count. My chest got tight. I felt cold sweat on my back. I didn't scream. I didn't move. I held the phone, hand shaking, trying not to blink. Then it flew off my grip and smashed into the far wall. But then silence. I tried to crawl towards the stairs. Something slammed into my back, then my leg. I flipped over and saw nothing, but I felt them. Hands, dozens, pulling me, crawling, scratching, fingers digging into my chest, my sides, my face, nails tearing at my shirt, my arms, my neck. It was chaos. I couldn't defend myself. I just curled up trying to protect my head. The pain was everywhere. No rhythm, just endless ripping and pulling. No face to punch, no body to push, just attacks from every direction. I thought I was going to die down there. I heard the door upstairs slam open. Dana's voice echoed down. Light hit the basement for a second. Every hand vanished. She ran down and reached me, grabbed my arms, pulled me hard. I couldn't walk. I let her drag me step by step. Every part of my body screamed. I felt skin hanging off my arm, wet and warm. I didn't look at it. She got us to the top, kicked the door shut behind us and locked it. Then she dropped beside me, gasping for air. We sat there for 10 minutes without speaking, not crying, just frozen. That night we left the house and never went back. We sold the place for next to nothing. We didn't care. We moved into a tiny apartment. No basement, no stairs, no weird shadows or old doors. We deleted Snapchat, threw out every phone, got dumb phones with no camera. Never spoke about it again. Never explained it to anyone. Dana still checks corners when she walks into a room. I sleep with the lights on. And sometimes, when I'm alone, I feel nails dragging slightly across my spine, like something testing if I still remember. I do. Every second. Every scratch. We never open Snapchat again. And never will.